create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us. It's been a very active weather morning. Now we have sun and wind outside our windows. It looks like we could see another round of storms later on. We've got a Twins ball game at Target Field, the Aquatennial Fireworks, and the big U2 show over at UCF Bank Stadium at the U tonight. So a lot of things going on here in the Twin Cities tonight, depending on the weather, and we'll keep an eye on that for you. But first things first, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Tom Schroyer is in studio. Great to see you, Tom.
Great to be here, Steve. And good morning to Dennis as well, our studio producer. I was thinking of the stadium because we'll be, my wife and I, at the TCF Stadium tonight for the U2 concert. Looking forward to that very much.
You have shelter, though. I don't. I'll be out in the elements. I might pay a visit, if you don't mind, if we get rain.
I think they'll check for your gate pass there, Steve. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'll try and use my media pass anyway to get out of the rain if it does come.
All right. Say, we have a great program today. Really an interesting show, and we'll be presenting that with my colleague, Taylor Tarvestad Steiner, who is a lawyer in Moss and Barnett's trial department, our litigation practice group. And good morning, Taylor.
Good morning, Tom. I'm very excited to be here today.
This is your first appearance on the program, I know, and so our audience will like to hear a little bit about you at least. Taylor is from the St. Cloud area, Steve. Her parents are both attorneys and graduated summa cum laude from the University of Minnesota and then attended Mitchell Law School, where she also earned high honors before spending, the last year, Taylor, clerking for Judge Elizabeth Martin in the 10th Judicial District out in Stillwater.
Exactly. That experience working with Judge Martin was probably one of the best experiences I could recommend for any new attorney out there. You really get a firsthand look at the court proceedings, and especially in Washington County, you get a variety of experience in different areas of law.
Exactly right. I know Moss and Barnett, our law firm, looks with great respect and regard for people who have come from judicial clerkships, and we try to recruit there actively, as we did recruit you from that background. Because, Steve, being a law clerk does provide a unique perspective on and great training for being a trial lawyer, which is what Taylor aspires to be doing now.
And what is the role of a clerk? What does a clerk do? Or do they assist the judge? Do they research all of the above?
Exactly. They do a lot of the research for the judge. They basically are the judge's assistant and assist her or him in researching the law, in drafting orders according to what the judge has found in the case. And basically, law clerks have a lot of experience with dealing with pro se parties, people representing themselves in court, because for the most part, law clerks are the only person between the judge and pro se parties that's their only connection to the court.
Taylor, I imagine being a law clerk also gives you great insight into watching different lawyers, and as we're going to talk about today, people who are representing themselves present their cases to get an idea of what works, what doesn't work, and that's a tremendous experience, as well as getting to go behind the scenes with the judge and find out what she's thinking about the case as it's unfolding and how she reaches her decisions.
Exactly. That's probably the most beneficial part about being a clerk, is that you get to see attorneys go into court and argue their cases, but then you get to see the behind the scenes, what happens behind the scenes, and how a decision is actually reached by the judge, what legal reasoning goes into that, and what facts are considered.
Our program today is going to focus on people going into court or handling legal matters that relate to court on their own without a lawyer, and that's called representing yourself pro se. Taylor, what does it mean to be pro se?
Well, pro se is actually the Latin term for oneself. So when we refer to someone as a pro se litigant, they are someone who goes into court and appears on behalf of themselves and argues their own case.
All right. So it's really a pro se party is someone who handles their own legal matter. And, of course, people are free. Individuals are free to do that in our democracy as we've set it up.
They are free to do that. And that right stems from the United States Code, which in turn stems from the the 1789 Judiciary Act, which states that parties are free to represent and plead their own cases on behalf of themselves.
So that's a law that dates right back to the birthdays, practically, of our nation as a federation of states.
It does. Representing yourself in court is something that has been around for a long time.
I know we did some checking as well here this week, and we also saw that Minnesota's Constitution recognizes the right for individuals to represent themselves in court in Constitutional Article 1, Section 8. And then the Supreme Court has adopted a rule as well that says that, and I'm quoting, a judge shall accord to every person who has a legal interest in a proceeding or that person's lawyer full right to be heard according to law. And close quote. And so there you have it. It's a right that individuals have. But what about businesses or corporations? Do they have the right to go into court and represent themselves?
That's a good question, Tom. Businesses do not have the right to represent themselves in court. They're what's considered a legal entity and not a person given the right to represent themselves in court. So basically, all businesses need to have an attorney acting for them in order to submit documents to the court or appear in person.
That can be a bit of a hardship for smaller businesses, of course, but that is just the way life is in America's legal system because, indeed, a corporation has an existence in the law that is separate from any human being.
Exactly. The officers and managers or directors of a corporation or an LLC, for example, they are not the corporation. They are separate and distinct entities, persons.
And would this be in any proceeding? I would assume that a murder trial, you would probably want an attorney. But in theory, could you represent yourself in a murder trial?
It depends upon the capacity of the person representing themselves. Typically, what you see, there's certain areas of law where you see pro se parties representing themselves more often than not. The first and foremost is in conciliation court matters. That's also known as small claims court, where
I call that humiliation court, by the way.
That's a term I haven't heard before. But in conciliation court, the dollar value of the damages is pretty small. So in theory, it's actually frowned upon for attorneys to appear on behalf of a party when such small damages are at issue. And in some cases, it's actually prohibited.
Right. I refer to jokingly to a small claims or conciliation court as I did because in my earlier days, I would spend a fair amount of time representing businesses in conciliation or small claims court because back in those days anyway, businesses had to have a lawyer represent themselves. But it wasn't long in my career before basically the court started adopting rules that actually prohibit lawyers from appearing for individuals and, as I understand it, in many courts, even for small businesses that are just pursuing small debt collection cases.
Exactly. Especially in conciliation court, it's very easy for a person to represent themselves. Most parties fill out forms that are required to be submitted by hand and go in and just argue their case and testify themselves, and they're the only party that is usually at the hearing.
Now, representing yourself in court proceedings is actually a trend that is booming here in the last several years.
It is, and you see it in certain areas more than others. First, conciliation court, which we just talked about, but also family law. A lot of family law issues have been handled by pro se parties. Significantly, 98% and 98% of paternity actions and 98% of actions involving domestic abuse, you see pro se parties representing themselves.
That's a surprising statistic that domestic abuse victims are appearing pro se, or I suppose even the accused in that situation.
It is surprising, but also when you think of domestic abuse, it generally happens at a time where you need immediate relief. So if a woman is being abused, she comes to court immediately, sometimes without resources, and it's on a temporary basis. So as you move forward in the court process, it's more likely for attorneys to get involved, but the initial appearance is generally pro se.
We're going to take a break. We have a whole lot more coming up. Once again, the topic today, representing yourself in court. For more info on today's program and all our other programs, feel free to go online. The website, moss-barnett.com. com. Our phone number on the program, if you want to talk about today's topic, a comment or a question, representing yourself in court, 651-989-9226. Toll free, 1-866-989-9226. Feel free to text the studio as well, 81807. That's 81807, and that's powered by Home Service Plus, an offering of CenterPoint Energy. Here on News Radio, 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Moss and Barnett, a history of excellence. Did you know Jesse Van Valkenburg opened his law office at 236 Hennepin Avenue in 1896? Leaving Moss and Barnett with a legacy of professionalism that we honor from our offices on the 48th floor of the Wells Fargo Center in the heart of Minneapolis.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. The topic today on the program, representing yourself in court. By the way, for more info on this program, feel free to go online. We'll have a lot more resources available on this topic beginning Monday at moss-barnett.com. Tom Schroyer, a great topic today on the program.
Right, Steve, especially because it's based upon recent experience that our guest, Taylor Tarvestad Steiner, had serving as a judicial law clerk in state court and in the Stillwater area, and had a lot of experience working with folks representing themselves in court on what's called a pro se basis. Now, I wanted to return, Taylor, to one of the topics we touched on briefly, and that is what happens when somebody in a criminal case wants to defend themselves. Steve wondered if there were certain kinds of cases where that's prohibited, and so what's the situation there?
Well, in a criminal matter, whether a defendant is represented by counsel or not, first of all, depends on their finances. If they cannot qualify to hire their own attorney, and if they qualify for a public defender, then the court will appoint the public defender to represent themselves. Otherwise, a lot of defendants who can afford an attorney do so. They hire an attorney to represent them in every stage of the proceedings. There are defendants who fall above the public defender level and below the being able to afford their own attorney. So that's where it gets a little bit more difficult to represent yourself.
Now, though, even if I have a public defender appointed for me, and even if I'm been charged as a defendant in a capital case, say a murder case, do I have the right to defend myself?
You do have the right to defend yourself. A lot of times, if the charge is serious enough, so in a lot of capital cases, the judge will appoint what's called advisory counsel, who will sit with you during the trial, advise you on any issues that arise, such as the rules of evidence or being able to submit documents and proof matters, and that person will be with you at all times, and you can use them as you see fit.
There are some notable examples where instances where individuals have tried to defend themselves in murder cases and haven't fared very well, though.
A prime example of that is actually Ted Bundy. In his 1979 murder trial, he defended himself, and we all know the results of that. It didn't end well, but nonetheless, he was permitted to do so.
And I would suppose in a lot of these cases, the judge would get annoyed that a complex case, someone with no legal background trying to defend themselves would slow the process down. And as busy as the courts are, I'm sure that's the last thing judge wants to see in a complex matter, someone trying to figure out the law on the fly.
Well, it does add to the duration of the proceedings, that's for sure. Judges do try to be accommodating to pro se parties. They sometimes during trial will explain some of the rules of evidence or explain what's required in order for a defendant to submit a document, that sort of thing. But the one thing they won't do is provide legal advice. And it's really up to the defendant to figure out what to the defendant and plaintiff and the parties to figure out what their cases are and how to support them.
I suppose when you were clerking for State Court Judge Elizabeth Martin, that you had occasions when people trying to represent themselves would ask you questions, ask you for advice.
Oh, actually, on a daily basis, I would receive calls from parties asking, how do I fill out certain forms? How do I bring a cause of action? How do I answer a complaint? It really was on a daily basis that I would get calls, and as a member of the court system, I couldn't give legal advice as well. So in general, what I could tell the parties is that I could refer them to our self-help center, which provides a lot of legal information and a lot of the forms that they need to start representing themselves.
Do most of the county or state courts have what you just called self-help centers?
Most of them do, most of the larger ones especially. So, for instance, the Hennepin County Government Center and the Washington County Government Center, they have very, very nice self-help centers that are actually staffed part-time with voluntary lawyers who will come in and make appointments with people to give them a little bit of legal advice on the appointment basis.
I know that one of my co-hosts on our program here, John Rossman, dedicates any number of hours every month to doing exactly that at a service in Hennepin County.
Exactly, and that's a very important service that I think lawyers can provide to people who can't afford their services. Mr. Rossman, he definitely is one of the members who contributes a great deal to providing that service, and it's very beneficial to people to be able to go in and talk to him for 20 minutes and figure out what to do with their case.
I understand that there are some online resources as well and that we're going to be posting them on our website.
There are. The Minnesota State Court website has all of the rules of procedure for civil cases, criminal cases, and all of the local rules that parties need to follow when bringing a case in front of a judge. So those will all be posted, as well as different locations of the self-health centers around Minnesota.
There are some forms as well that the courts have published that people can use to present their cases.
There are forms. Now, I would like to preface this by saying that some of the forms are very basic and some are limited in the information. And if you're going to use those forms, you really need to read over them carefully to figure out if everything that's on the form applies to your case or not.
You know, it's often said that a lawyer has a fool for herself or himself as a client, and so that lawyers shouldn't go pro se, even though we know the ins and outs of the court system. What would you say to a layperson when they want to talk about representing themselves? Good idea? Bad idea?
Well, it depends on a number of things. It first depends on how complex your case is. If you feel like you have a really good understanding of what the issues are and what your defenses are, then I would say you could represent yourself. But when you get into really difficult issues or when the case involves a significant amount of money, that's when you want to get a lawyer involved or at least seek the advice of a lawyer to figure out how to best proceed.
All right, we'll come back after a break and talk about some of the do's and don'ts and the common mistakes that people make when they represent themselves in court.
We have more on the way. Tom Schroyer is our host on the program today. Taylor Tarvisted Steiner is joining us. Representing yourself in court, it is Minnesota Law, Saturdays between 11 and noon. News Radio 830 WCCO. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. For more info on today's program and all our other programs, including podcasts, go online on moss-barnett.com. Tom Schroyer is back in studio hosting the program. Great to see you, Tom.
Steve, it's fun to be back again after having last week off for a little R&R, and especially to be joined this morning by Taylor Tarvisted Steiner, who is a lawyer in Moss and Barnett's litigation practice group, and we're talking about a bit of an offshoot from Taylor's experience as a judicial law clerk, that is people representing themselves in court. And we shared that people have a constitutional and a statutory right to represent themselves in court on any number and variety and manner of litigation that they might face, including criminal cases, and that, however, it's a decision to go pro se is sometimes fraught with risks and peril, and we're going to talk a bit about some of the mistakes of that here in our second half hour with Taylor. Taylor, let's talk about the number one mistake that individuals make when they represent themselves in court.
Well, the number one mistake pro se parties make is that they're unfamiliar with the rules of procedure that govern their case. Now, these rules are different depending on what court you're in and also different depending on what state you're in as well. So, for instance, Minnesota, if you're sued in a Minnesota state court and it's a civil case, the Minnesota rules of civil procedure will govern your case. If, however, you're sued in the Eighth Circuit or a United States District Court, the federal rules will govern your case. And likewise, if you're in tax court or bankruptcy court or criminal court, all of those different courts have their own rules.
You were saying before the break that most of those rules can be found online, although I must say they, I think, would be very hard for a layperson to understand, at least as I'm thinking back to when I first started getting going on learning those rules when I was a law student.
It is actually pretty complicated to understand the rules, although the publishers of the books and the publishers of the rules do try and make it easy. The rules have been interpreted by courts over and over again, and they're constantly being updated and changed to account for new changes in the law.
Even understanding just the basic elements of a lawsuit can be tough. What are those?
Well, the rules govern, basically, you start with the commencement of a case, and that's done by serving what's called the complaint. The complaint has to include certain information in order for it to be considered sufficient. First of all, you need to assert all the facts that underlie your claim. You can do that in summary form. You don't need to provide evidence at this initial stage when you're preparing the complaint, but you do need to provide detailed enough facts so the party against you, the defendant, can figure out what you're asking for and what your claims are. So in addition to the facts, you need to provide the legal claims. You need to outline, for instance, if you have a breach of contract case, you need to outline what the elements of a breach of contract are. And then you also need to include a prayer for relief in your contract, basically, or excuse me, in your complaint, which is just asking the court for what you seek.
And then what happens after you serve the complaint on the other party?
Well, that's when certain deadlines from the rules start to apply. When you serve a complaint, the defendant has 20 days to respond to the complaint in the form of an answer. Now, the rules provide detailed requirements about what needs to be included in the answer as well. For instance, you need to address every allegation made against you in the complaint. So first, you either admit the allegation, deny the allegation, or you can state that you have insufficient information to either admit or deny it. The answer is also a great place to assert any defenses that you have, and it's a place where you assert counterclaims that you have against the plaintiff.
And if you fail to assert a counterclaim at that point, you might lose it.
You do lose some of that, and especially if defenses. So, for instance, if you don't believe that the court has jurisdiction over you, if you don't raise that in the answer, that's a defense that you lose, and you will be forced to proceed in the court where you are sued.
And then after that, the litigation process unfolds through its normal stages of the parties exchanging information, making motions to the judge to dismiss the case or to limit what gets presented, and if the parties can't then agree on an outcome to actually go to trial.
Exactly. And the rules are very specific on what needs to occur at every stage in those proceedings. So, for instance, when you are trying to get information from the other party, that's called discovery. And the rules provide a variety of different ways to obtain that information through discovery purposes. Also, you can get information from non-parties through the use of subpoenas. And the rules actually govern all the way up to trial and through trial and past to judgment.
I suppose in this situation where someone chooses to represent themselves, unless they're a skilled negotiator, the art of finding a reasonable settlement before going to trial, I think the court seems to like that. In what I've learned over the years on this program, that trying to avoid trial and reaching a settlement beforehand, and I just can't imagine a lot of people off the street are very good at doing that sort of thing.
And you're very correct that that's kind of the goal of the court system. The courts are very overloaded at this time, and they do encourage parties to look for alternative forms of dispute resolution. For example, in family matters, a lot of times judges will require the parties to mediate before they come to court for a divorce trial.
Yeah, my experience has been exactly that as well. I'm a certified civil trial specialist, and overwhelmingly the judges will require us to go into mediation or other forms of non-binding resolution efforts. And indeed, as we've heard on our program before, about 98 or 99% of all civil cases are settled before a trial. So negotiating skills are huge. You're right, Steve. Now, let's say, though, that we don't get a case settled, Taylor, and we have to go to trial, and we don't have a lawyer. Is that problematic?
It is problematic if you don't understand the rules governing trial, and most specifically the rules of evidence. This is probably the number one problem that pro se parties experience when they're in court for a trial. just not understanding the evidence, not knowing what to bring in to support their claims, and also not knowing how to object to evidence that they find questionable.
Without going into any of the details of the matter, can you tell us what was the the most extreme or the clearest example of a party being pro se and making that mistake of not having a lawyer?
Exactly. Well, actually, the best example that I can think of in my mind was a boundary dispute that one party was pro se. So one party built a fence between his property and the property of his neighbor and basically built it on the other neighbor's property, whereas the neighbor claimed that the fence was encroaching on his land.
You know, we had Kurt Smith on in March to talk about boundary disputes. That was one of our best shows, I think, Steve.
Yeah, it very hot topic. It seems as though those borders raise a lot of disputes. We'll have more on this topic. Representing yourself in court, Tom Schroyer is our host. Taylor Tarvestad Shiner is our guest attorney on the program today. By the way, for more info on the program, feel free to go online, moss-barnett.com. We'll return in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
A person who represents himself has a fool for a client. Did you know individuals who present their own cases in a lawsuit are called pro se parties? A corporation may not appear pro se by law because it is not a natural person.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. Saturdays between 11 and noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Tom Schroyer is our host. Back after a week off. Tom, great program today, and time's going very quickly. Once again, the topic today, representing yourself in court, Taylor Tarvestad Shiner joining us in the studio today.
We probably should say if folks have a quick question they want to call in, they can sure do that in our remaining time. But in any case, we're going to return to the example that Taylor was giving of what she actually saw in court of a pro se party and how that didn't turn out so well in a boundary law dispute.
Exactly. So what happened in this case was the plaintiff brought claims against the defendant for a variety of issues. And in order to defend himself, the defendant took a bunch of pictures of the property and brought in a bunch of different documents. But what he failed to do is to disclose all these documents to the other counsel before trial. Generally, the rules require you to provide the other counsel with a witness list. And basically that states who your witnesses are going to be and what they're going to say for the most part, and exhibit lists. And exhibit lists are basically list all the numbers of trial exhibits you're going to rely on for your case. Now, in this case, the defendant brought all of his documents to court the very first day in a box and said, "Judge, I'd like to admit these into evidence." Well, obviously, the other party objected to that. The rules of evidence require you to lay foundation for testimony, and they require you to authenticate every document individually. So that was problem number one. The result of that was many of those documents didn't get admitted. Some of the testimony didn't get admitted, and he was unable to support to plead his defenses and win the case.
And there are lots of complicated legal issues involved in boundary law disputes. How did the pro se party fare on that?
Well, that's the problem when all those documents weren't able to come in, he wasn't able to establish the various elements of each claim. So, for instance, there was the claim of adverse possession, where basically one party's claiming that they own property of another based upon continuous use of the property and using the property against the rights of someone who does own it. So in this case, he wasn't able to establish that he used the property continuously. For instance, he brought in evidence showing that he mowed the lawn in the summer, but he did nothing with the yard or nothing with the fence in the wintertime. So that's one element of adverse possession that he just wasn't able to meet.
All right. So the outcome was not a happy one in that instance, although there are times when a pro se individual does just fine.
There are times when a pro se party does just fine, and that's if they follow all of the rules. if they read the rules, they're familiar with the rules, and sometimes they can ask for assistance when they need it.
One of the more notable situations when a person was unrepresented by a lawyer and actually handled a very complicated set of legal challenges was when Robert Kearns, who invented the intermittent windshield wiper, acted as his own lawyer and yet won patent infringement claims for millions of dollars of damages against Ford and Chrysler.
That's a very good example of a party representing himself, and one is left to wonder if he was represented by an attorney, what his award would have been beyond what he received.
Right. There was a great movie about that called Flash of Genius back in 2008. I don't know if you had a chance to catch that, Steve.
Well, and it's a famous case because it took years for this to be resolved. It went on and on and fighting all these manufacturers, not only here in the United States, but all over the world. It's an extraordinary story.
Exactly, and part of the reason it took so long is because the issues involved are very complicated. If you're talking about patent infringement, that involves very highly technical information, and you need to be very careful in establishing the elements to your claim.
And it sounds like that would take a lot of time. There's a lot of work involved. If you have a full-time job and a family, I don't know how someone would take this on without some help, without some representation. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. Final segment of the program, representing yourself in court today on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Welcome back one more time. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Tom?
Steve, in our quick closing segment here, we're going to talk about how folks can get the benefit of legal representation but without buying the whole package using a new technique that is coming into play called unbundling, which is buying discrete task representation from a lawyer. Taylor, can you fill us in?
Yes, unbundling is where a client, when he wants to handle most of the case himself, but he needs help with a discrete part of his case, such as figuring out what his claims are or the discovery process or even help at trial, you can hire a lawyer for just that discrete service.
So can you give an example of how that might work?
Yes, for example, if someone feels like he's being wronged, he can come in and ask a lawyer for a claims assessment, for example. The lawyer can research the law and figure out what viable claims that person has and then relay that information to the client, and he can move forward with those claims.
How about some of the discrete steps of a lawsuit, like preparing a complaint or an answer or helping to draft a motion?
That is also very common, and one context where that's very common is in the family law area. Many people hire an outside source to draft their divorce decree if it's fairly simple, if there's not too many complicated issues in there. That's or sometimes you see this in the transactional field where you hire an attorney to just draft a complaint or just draft a contract for you.
I must say, as the managing partner for a law firm, I have some reservations about doing that because it's so hard to differentiate between where one task ends and another begins, and also how you can draw a line, a fine line in some cases, between preparing an answer and telling somebody exactly how their case is going to come out in its entirety.
Exactly. There are some ethical issues that give lawyers a little bit of concern, and because they want to provide adequate advice and complete advice.
We've got a run. Taylor Tarvis, Jed Steiner joining us on the program, representing yourself in court. Tom Schroyer, our host, week in, week out. Tom, next week on the program,
Marcy Frost returns to talk about the Fair Labor Standards laws of the federal and state governments and how they affect employers, both private and governmental.
It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, Saturdays at 11.